Hi, everybody. This is Rita Prazeres Gonçalves, linguist and senior talent management consultant. In this podcast, I have conversations with language professionals who are willing to talk about their experience, their knowledge, and their strategies to navigate the ever-changing language industry. This is also a space where I can learn and share my insights. I have been working with LSPs, enterprise clients, and freelancers for over 20 years, and my main focus is talent management for the localization industry. Let's get to know some of the most interesting people in our field: translators, company owners, association representatives, and community builders. This is The Language Worker. This podcast is also available as a video cast on YouTube. Hi, everybody. This is a holiday here in Portugal, but I had scheduled with Gio for us to talk, I guess, a few weeks ago already. So we've been going back and forth, not knowing when to do it. So we just did it today, right? So I just came into the office for this. So it's a special occasion. It's very nice to meet you. So it's one of those cases, Gio, where I don't know anything about the person, but it was actually a friend who has been on the podcast who recommended me to talk to Gio and ask him to come on the podcast because apparently Gio has amazing things to tell us. So that's the story. I don't know anything about Gio. I've never worked with Gio, but apparently people think that Gio should be on the podcast. And so I'll just do it, right? So thank you so much, Gio, for being here. I know it's a bit earlier than we had anticipated, but that's what happens in holidays and places in days like this. So thank you so much for being here. I cannot wait to get to meet you. The first thing I saw was that he's wearing his BNI badge, and we will talk about that because I actually happen to know what it is, right? And I know that a lot of people don't know about it, but it's really worth discussing it. So we will do it a little bit further, but I guess I'll just start by asking you to pronounce your name, which I'm sure is beautiful, but I don't know how to say it. And then we will find out everything about you. So good morning, Gio.
Good morning, Rita. Thanks a lot for having me. So my name is Gyokan, but I mean Gyokan or Gyokan. Over the years, I learned not to care too much about the pronunciation, especially in Belgium, where we have the French-speaking community, and then Dutch and French speakers say Gyokan, and then Dutch speakers say Hyokan. But actually, it's Gyokan. It's a name. It's a Turkish name. But people who know me usually tend to say Gio or Gio, whatever is easier.
Okay, so in the end, let's pronounce the whole thing, first name and last name, so we know, and then we'll move on with Gio.
Right. Gökhan Hamdi is the full name then.
That's the original Turkish name, right? So let's start there. So you are originally from Turkey, or you were already somewhere when you were born, or your parents were already somewhere when you were born?
It's a complicated story, actually. So we are part of the Turkish community in Bulgaria. And because of historical and economical reasons, my parents at some point decided to go work in Turkey for a few years, where I was born. And then they went back to Bulgaria. I grew there up until 10 years old. And then my parents, in the meantime, were already in Belgium because they were looking for work and they came here. And I followed them at 10 years old in 2003. I landed in Brussels. I started going to a French-speaking school. And then we bought a house in the Flemish region. So I moved at 13 years old. I moved to a Dutch-speaking school, and then yeah, so that's the big timeline in my life. That's also where I was introduced to languages, I guess, but a bit
Well, I
forced.
can see that. I mean, it's a bit obvious with all the back and forth and countries and communities and going back and studying in different countries. So I guess it was a little bit inevitable that at least languages would be very important in your life. Not necessarily, doesn't necessarily mean that you would work with languages, but I don't know what you do in languages. So I'm still waiting to get to know what the real story is. So then what happens? You study French and Dutch and all of those things. So then what happens when you are 18 and have to choose about your supposed future?
Yes. Well, I think I fell in love with French at some point when I came here, and I never let go of French even when I was in the Dutch speaking school. So I told to my parents, okay, I'm going to study in French in Brussels. So I went back to Brussels to study at the university. I first studied 2 years in law school at the ULB, but that wasn't for me. And then I decided to go back to what I can and what I love, and that's languages. So one of the options was translation. So that's what I did. I enrolled in a translation school before it was the ISTE, maybe you know it already. And now it became the U part of the ULB again. And so, yeah, there I had to choose a language combination. So I went for the languages that I already knew, French, Dutch, and English. So nothing to do with Bulgarian and Turkish, because even though they are interesting and I love them, it's not, I didn't see the potential professionally at that time.
You know,
And
so in your studies, you basically studied in those languages and not in Bulgarian or Turkish.
yes. So since I went to a French-speaking school, my native language there was considered French. So I studied English, French, and Dutch French in bachelor, but also in the master's degree. So I enrolled there in, I think, 2013, and I had no clue what I wanted to do. I knew it was something in languages because I knew the languages already. And then we learned about translation. Up until the first year of the master's degree, I had no clue what I wanted to do. And then I arrived there. I tried to enroll in the interpreting program. That seemed a little too hard for me, since actually my native language is Turkish. That's what we talk at home, and I didn't have the reactivity with French to be able to spit out all those words when
It's an
interpreting.
amazing job. It's a very hard job. It's an incredible job. It's an inhuman job.
Yes, it
It's
is.
like a supercomputer in your head, that's for sure. So then what happened? What did you decide?
1 or 2 months passed, and then I went back to the entire program of the master's degree, and I noticed there was something called the language industry. So with a full focus on the technical side of the language translation industry, software and tools used in the industry, subtitling, project management. And so that's where I switched, and I finished that course. I didn't graduate from the second year of master's. I did all the courses. I have all of them, but the thesis I have never managed to complete it. So that's that.
I hear you.
And yeah, so that's at the beginning of the master's degree, I discovered this new this new world, because it resonated with me, because I have always loved technology, and I was in love with programming, and not that I have studied it anywhere, but as a hobby I have developed some knowledge. And I loved gaming as well, and we had a localization course at the in within this master's course. And throughout the 2 years of master's degree, I discovered the project management course as well, and there I have learned a lot of good stuff that would be very useful later on. And I have done an internship in the company of one of the lecturers. She was behind the project management course in the master's degree. And
So she owned the company. right?
Yes,
And so
yes.
she invited you to be a trainee in her company
Yes, I've had
for
that
project
chance.
management.
Yeah. Well, it was about project management. It was all the technical side in the industry. I could have done translation, but as I said, as I discovered this new field, technological side, I just moved away from really translating, and I dove into project management. And
So actually, you never worked as a translator, or did you?
on a couple of smaller projects, but I quickly noticed it's not really productive on my end. I mean,
So
it's a
how was
skill
the
to
internship
develop.
there? Was it a big company, a smaller company? So what was the story with the company where you did
It
your
was
internship?
a medium-sized company with about 5 or 6 project managers,
Is
and
that a medium-sized company?
I think
That's funny. I
that
guess not, but hey.
I don't know. Well,
You know how many
so
employees they have in the big ones? So I guess it's
oh,
not medium, so it's on the smaller side, I guess.
don't. All right. Well, yeah, I joined the internship there with another colleague of mine, and I joined first the DTP team, then
Really?
I was introduced to file preparation, terminology management, glossaries, and translation memories. I also did some project management there, and also a lot of QA, linguistic and technical QA. And that wrapped the internship for me. And I walked away with a feeling of having found what I wanted, I've always wanted to do. And so as soon as the year ended, I started freelancing, and I partly worked for that company where I did my internship. And I also kept looking for other opportunities
So
in
you were
industry.
freelancing, but as a project manager or as a DTP manager or
I started as a DTP technician, but I also did regular QA and terminology tasks. And then slowly I moved towards full-time project management.
And that was in Belgium.
That was in Belgium. I've always worked with companies in Belgium. So smaller companies in Belgium.
Right. Well, they're small, but they have a big impact from what I've heard. So, yeah, one thing doesn't take away from the other. Right. So, what happened? So, where did you land? So, did you land the job as a full-blown project manager later on, or what was the story?
Yeah, so 2019, I really started full-time freelancing, and I worked on smaller projects here and there up until the beginning of 2020. And then I wanted to diversify my client base a little bit. So I have found an opportunity at the Belgian's Chamber of Translators and Interpreters. There was a temporary role, and I went there. I worked for 5 months, I think. And then I kept looking for other jobs. I worked at another company for 3 months where I filled another temporary project management role. And then at the end of 2020, I have actually mid-2020, I sent a spontaneous reach out to companies to see if they were looking for DTP specialists or project managers. And one of them reacted. Entre les lignes, ELL, you probably know about them. And I started working with Tim and Olivia at the end of, so it was December 2020, and it quickly became a full-time job, basically as a project manager, full-time project manager. And so that's what happened for 3 years. A lot of high density project management, a lot of high speed
Yeah, it's a
labor.
really hard job. I always say it. I always say it. It's a really, really hard job. And as we know it, the industry cannot work without it, right? So it's really the core role of the industry. It doesn't matter what your background is, in the sense of if you are the owner of the company, if you are an employee, whatever you are, basically there has to be someone managing projects from whatever perspective. So it's a really hard job because you have to be like the middle person between all of those stakeholders for that one project. Sometimes one task can involve 10 or 15 people. So it's really, really complicated. You have to manage that. And of course, you have to manage time and money. So people, time, and money, it's a huge deal. And you still have to deliver good quality and things that can be, up to par. So it's a really complicated job, as I always say, and I love talking to project managers, ex-project managers, future project managers, because I think it's like if you have seen the world of languages from that perspective, you don't have the same perspective as everybody else, because it's a lot, a lot higher, a lot
Totally
further.
agree.
Because you really have to know even things that haven't happened yet. It's a really complicated job. So I guess everybody would agree. So 3 years, whew, that's great.
It was a great time. It was a lot of problem solving and client contact and stuff. But it seems, even though it's very stressful to be a project manager in general, I think having a great team helps a lot.
Well, company policies help a lot.
Right.
That's what I
And
have to
so
say, right?
I enjoyed my time at ALL, and then after mid 2023, one thing led to another, and I was ready to take another step into the future. Since the beginning of my freelancing journey, I wanted to have a translation company. So, and I didn't quit ALL thinking I would start one, but I needed to do something else. And so that was in October 2023. And then I sat there thinking, what am I going to do? What's the next step? And I decided to go in that journey, a new adventure, start my own translation company. And so I started in January 2024.
Wow, congratulations. So
Thank you.
that's 6 months now.
Yes, that's 6 months with a lot of ups and downs, as you might expect, starting from scratch. But the past 5 years have taught me a lot about the industry, about how companies operate, about personal relationships, and how to talk with clients and manage them.
So what kind of philosophy did you have in order to create your company? So you were all these years who have been, learning, you have been studying the market, you have been, you've been in touch with the market in the real life, right? So it's not just a bunch of ideas, it's something that you have done now, and especially as a project manager, obviously you have the full view of what the industry entails, especially if you were in touch with clients and all that. So what was your main idea? I don't say goal because everybody knows what the goal is when we create our own projects, your own companies, all that. So your main philosophy, why did you think there was a place for you in the market with the many thousands of companies that exist?
Well, so I've noticed, or like everybody would say, the translation market is a huge market. There's work for everyone. There's a place for everyone to be, as long as you do it well and you want to provide quality and good values. You have good values on the table, and so I've always been a problem solver. But working in an existing structure is sometimes hard because you have to comply with the in-house policies, and you can't do whatever you want basically. And that has been a bit frustrating at some instances. And but my initial goal was to have my translation company because I wanted to serve my own clients and do have a company that might live on its own as a baby you would bring up, and then it would grow up to live its own life. So
So you want
that's
to
the
evolve, basically.
yes. It's not necessarily the financial part, it's more to achieve something that might eventually be a player on the market and have its own values and just share the good intentions we put behind it. That was the initial idea. I started in January thinking, oh, okay, I love technology, I love gaming. I will focus on the IT and video game industries. But as you might remember, the industry was a bit shaken in January 2023, 24, sorry. And so it seems it wasn't such a great idea to focus on those two markets because of, I mean, various reasons. Also because I had no credibility. I just arrived. I'm trying to build something. When I go to people, they don't necessarily want to work with someone without any portfolio to show off. And
Was your idea to do your own translation, or was the idea for you to, in the beginning, let's see what's happening now, but in the beginning, was it your idea to do the translation yourself, to get informed and get your hands dirty in the language work, or was it always to just manage it, well, from a project management point of view? So what was the idea in the beginning?
well, from start, I wanted to work with freelance linguists, I mean, linguists, language experts and translators, because the added value of translators is the linguistic skills they master. I also have the translation skill, let's say, but I don't have the expertise of the years. What I excel in is problem solving, all the technical aspects, terminology management. I love it, and I thought it would be very interesting in those two specific industries. But I mean, I was ready to translate at the beginning. I was ready to translate into French, but that would depend on the projects, obviously. But since I had the initial idea of working with my network of linguists that I've acquired over the years.
So the idea was always for you to be more dedicated to project management and everything else management.
Yes, absolutely. But yeah, first quarter of 2024 passed, and I had no luck with any players in the IT and gaming industry. So I sat and I had to revise the
You
strategy.
had a meeting with yourself and
Yes,
you made decisions.
a lot of meetings. And so after a lot of meditating, I decided to take a step back, go a bit broader with the objective. And so I decided to go with two categories instead of really specific industries. I would go for the creative projects and also the technical projects. On the other hand, I believe we can deliver great quality in both categories with great workflows and quality linguists. So that's where I'm at the moment. At the beginning of what was it? Yes, April. I started doing cold reach outs. I mean, I never thought that would work, but it seems it works. So I started sending out emails, testing, reaching out by phone, trying to network over LinkedIn in person. And yeah, it seems it's picking up a little bit of speed now. So that's where I'm at.
So basically, you do creative, so marketing things, and then the technical, so the IT technical type of thing, right?
IT and legal, yes.
IT and legal.
I mean, yeah, it's another field, but there is a lot of demand, especially in Belgium. I focused at the moment on the Belgian market because of the bilingual structure,
Yeah, I was
even
going
for.
to ask that. So which languages are involved here? So what is your main, let's say, source language and your main target languages? I suppose it works a bit like that.
Right. At the moment, we primarily work from French to Dutch and from Dutch to French, and also from obviously from English to French Dutch and the other way around. At the core of the translation business, I decided to build. I've put French, Dutch, German, and English, and also Italian, Portuguese, and Spanish.
Okay, so you think those make sense together, right? Being a Dutch translator is very relevant and sometimes very hard to find. I mean, I had a lot of experience with the Dutch speakers, both for the Netherlands and for French. So yeah, so I managed a lot of projects with Dutch, so I kind of know the market a little bit. So I know it's really, really it's not hard. It's not the matter of being hard. It's a matter of being a bit more expensive than certain clients would expect. But you have amazing people, and you have amazing. I know amazing project managers and translators and everybody else involved. So it's really good. I really see it as a good reference. I always say, look at the Dutch market, or every time I want to give examples on how, to actually maintain quality and somewhat decent rates for everybody involved. So I kind of know it a little bit. So I understand that you focus on that, and it's what you know also, right?
Yes. I have the luck to know both languages very well, so it allows me to even contact and assess the quality of the end product.
So let's talk about business. Now that you consider yourself a business owner, which is a different role, I suppose, than your previous roles. So that is, I suppose, in that context, you were trying to, network and make yourself visible and all that. And I suppose that's when, because you said it was recent, the BNI situation came about. So let's talk a little bit about how you got there and why you decided to actually join.
Well, yeah, as I told you, I was reaching out to people, cold reach out, and I have contacted this marketing guy on LinkedIn. I just wanted to meet him and talk and get to know more about his network eventually. And he happened to be the president of one of the BNI groups in Liège here next door. So he just invited me to come over and see what they are doing, not necessarily to join, but like just meet him and his group eventually. I went there and I was really impressed by the professionalism and the ambience and also the motivation of the people there. And they just embraced me and invited me to be part of the group. And the values of the group are incredible as well. It's an international business network, BNI, and it is built around not necessarily the idea of working together, although they do that directly as well. It's more about sharing knowledge, sharing solutions to issues because everyone has his own business and trying to scale it to some extent. And then ultimately the main thing is to recommend each other to everyone's network. So we have access to the network of the people that are part of that group, basically. And it's you have to pay a fee, a yearly fee to join the group, but it's some money you don't have to put in your own marketing, and it has much more return.
So you think it's, and I know how much it is, sort of, because I also have a few friends who are involved, and I've been invited to a few meetings. And like I told you, because that's the only thing we talked about before recording, I actually attended a meeting last Wednesday, and I'm thinking about joining a group too. So I understand. So have you already felt a bit of that marketing impact, that it's a mouth-to-mouth kind of thing?
The group told me right away that it usually takes about 6 months to get your investment back. So it's an investment of about 1,500 euros here, although the price might change from group to group. But I've had a talk with other members, and they have told me they've done in the past year they've done 30K business thanks to the network, only thanks to the network, and more. And the numbers of the group are just amazing in general. Each week there is a metric that they track on their application, and they have to log in. We have shared so much business. So if I refer you, you put in how much you have earned thanks to my referral, and then it just adds to the metrics. You don't have to exchange the money. You don't have to pay anyone anything else than your joining fee, basically, but just exchange the numbers so it's tracked, and it adds a bit more of a KPI, basically, because they have requirements. You have to actively meet people, refer your group members to your own network, and so on. And I have not yet had clients directly from them, but I have had quote requests from them. Okay,
So there's been
price.
some action.
Yes. I can see an impact. So basically, yes, I see an impact marketing wise, although I didn't necessarily make any sales thanks to the group yet.
Yeah, but they will come soon. So what other groups and all other networking avenues are you pursuing?
I have, so that was a lot of learning and exploring for me, because I come from out of nowhere. I was behind my computer. I was a project manager, and then I decided to upgrade myself, basically. But there was a lot of knowledge lacking, so I had to learn how to do it well. And now I'm trying to market myself on LinkedIn. Trying to network, trying to publish regularly. In person, I have not been able to join a lot of networking occasions elsewhere. I was actively looking for one, and I found the BNI, but I have not. I went to a couple of events here and there, but nothing active. I mean, no, nothing recurringly active.
Yes, but I guess it's still very recent and you have changed your way of doing business, right? Because you went from being considering yourself more of a freelancer, now more of a business owner. So I guess it takes a little bit of time for you to also adjust everything else about your life. So I would say thank you so much for being here because I mean, I always enjoy finding people, in these transition moments because this is so new to you. So it's like amazing. And I understand the importance of talking to other professionals, being visible, getting to know people who have other types of platforms and podcasts and things like that. It's a classic that people get invited to other podcasts after being in the podcast. So I'm sure it will happen soon. Right, because that's just how it goes. And I like that. I like that, usually it's somebody's first podcast and they just start their career. So is it your case? Is it your first podcast?
Yes, totally. I was going to say it's my first. I prepared for the occasion. I wanted
I can
to
see
attend
that impressive
podcast with
microphone.
my own. Yes. So I just wanted to have a good audio quality in case I have to meet clients over a video call. Or eventually, my idea was one day I want maybe to have a podcast.
Let me know. I can mentor you.
That would be great.
Yes, I have two podcasts and I'm preparing a third one with the Magic Beans
Okay.
guys. So yeah,
I'll stay
so there's a
tuned.
lot of podcasting in my life and I actually love it. And everybody knows I do everything myself, right? And it's the triple not. Like I call it, like the not prepared, not edited, and not scripted. So that's how I do it. And I advise everybody to do a little bit of this because I know that most of the people who have podcasts do it in a very structured way. But it doesn't work for me because I like surprises. I like doing it on the spot. And we were counting on some technical problems because when we logged in, things were not, they were a bit shaky. And I was like, okay, let's just go and see what happens. So if the technical problem is not too serious, we'll also keep it.
Yes,
That's how
absolutely.
to do it in my opinion, right? But I understand that, different personalities call for different types of projects, and this is what works for me, and I love it. It's almost a year and a half now. And so, yeah, so it's I already consider myself an experienced podcaster.
The spontaneity reminds me of Joe Rogan.
Well, we'll see how it goes, but for now it works. I mean, it works for me for sure. I'm very happy about it. It's great to get to know new people, and I love knowing people in this format. So I always say that this is if I, was meeting you for the first time in some sort of event or something like that, I guess I would ask these questions, right? So that's why I don't like preparing it because, unless you want to say something that it's very important and I didn't ask you, which you're free to do, because sometimes people they have their own agenda, but the fact that I don't prepare doesn't allow them to actually come in and say this specific thing. So if there's anything that was missed, just feel free to do it. If not, I will be around. I have a lot of networking events going. I do lock lunch. That's another good idea for you. If you want to get more information, I can also talk to you about that. So there's lock lunches, there's networking for language professionals that I do with my friend Kirsty Wolf. So there's all sorts of things. We would love to have you there. So I guess I will see you around.
Yes, I also attended the Translators in Belgium. That's one of the networks. I've always been a part of the network, but not necessarily active. And I recently just jumped into one of their meetups, and I met a couple of translators there with whom I might eventually work as soon as I have more projects in their language combinations. But I really see the so as a business owner, although it's new, I see the value of networking, and I think that's something we don't necessarily get to do a lot when freelancing and working with maybe agencies or direct clients. We don't necessarily go outside our caves to meet people and
I guess that's the thing of the past. And now I guess the community of translators and everybody else involved seems to be famous for doing exactly the opposite these days. And it's kind of shaping the industry and changing a lot of things. But yeah, I definitely invite you to come and join anything that I'm organizing or look around and see what everybody else is organizing. Lock lunches are everywhere, for example. And you can join one from San Diego. That's a great one. I've already joined and really liked. So there's the Jakarta one. So there's all sorts of things if you prefer to be involved in a group that is, far away from you to see what the story is on that corner of the world, or if you want something closer, there's, lock lunches everywhere, things like that. But there's other options, obviously, but that's just the ones I know from the top of my head.
No, I read
So
a lot about lock lunch as well on LinkedIn because people post their experience there.
yes, of course.
Great.
Alrighty, thank you so much. So I'm sure I'll be seeing a lot of you on LinkedIn and everywhere else. And yes, I'm sure it's going to be a very successful episode because I think people really want to know what it is like to actually start your own company in 2024, such an important and, scary year in our
Yeah, it's
industry.
challenging, but I think it's a special experience that is also very it teaches a lot.
Yeah, for sure. That is right. Alrighty, thank you so much, and I'll see you around, and good luck with all of your projects.
Thank you very much, Rita.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.